terms of people who the state claimed did not have this proof of citizenship, but the Arizona Supreme Court said that they actually can cast both federal and state ballots. And the interesting thing is, these voters who supposedly lacked proof of citizenship, they were disproportionately likely to be Republicans. So it just goes to show you that when you try to suppress the voting rights, and they're trying to suppress the voting rights of Democrats and voters of color, there can also be collateral damage that hurts Republicans as well.
And finally, go back to Georgia, where we began, and the overall significance of this for the federal election.
What's happening in Georgia is incredibly disturbing, because the MAGA-aligned election board, really at the 11th hour, is passing not one, not two, but three or more rule changes that could lead Republican county boards not to certify the election if a Democrat wins. That could plunge the state into chaos. Trump could then weaponize that disinformation. There's a lot of unpredictable outcomes there. That could also delay the counting of votes, which could send the election to the House. So right now, we're just witnessing all of these really disturbing efforts very late in the game to try to manipulate the Democratic process to Republicans' benefits. And they're basically using all the tools they have to essentially rerun the 2020 playbook to try to steal the election. But this time, they're running it before the election.
Ari Berman, I want to thank you for being with us, voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine. We'll link to your articles. Happy belated birthday to Jackie Sam. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
We want you to join us Saturday, September 28th. From 2 to 5 p.m. for a special live broadcast during the Compassionate Living Festival, which runs from noon to 6 p.m. at Norse Hall in Portland. Tune in for our coverage featuring keynote speaker Erin Wing, an undercover investigator sharing her experiences with animals raised for slaughter. We'll also have panel discussions with experts on the benefits of a plant-based diet for people, animals, and the planet. That's September 28th, 2 to 5 p.m., live on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, September 30th at 5:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon rent increases will be capped at 10% in 2025.
Portland City Commissioner Renee Gonzalez proposes countywide restrictions on tent distribution.
And in international news, Earth will get a mini moon for a limited time only.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, September 23rd, 2024. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. your rent is only going up 10% in 2025. The Oregon Department of Administrative Services announced the annual rent increase allowed for next year will be 10%. A 2019 Oregon law allows landlords one rent increase in any 12-month period. That increase is limited to either the average change in the consumer price index or 10%, whichever is lower. Since 2019, the rent increase had held around 9%, but inflation in 2022 allowed for a 14.6% increase. That prompted Oregon Governor Tina Kotek to sign a bill adding a hard 10% cap to the formula. Oregon's rent control laws were enacted to address housing affordability and provide stability for tenants. The state currently has a shortage of roughly 100,000 housing units. This has greatly increased competition for places to live. In Portland, housing costs have also increased rapidly, making it harder for low-income households to find affordable housing. Rent control laws help protect tenants from sudden and dramatic changes to their cost of living, but may also reduce the quality and quantity of available rental units in the long run. Seven states in the United States and the District of Columbia have some form of residential rent control. Oregon's law was the first state in the nation to adopt a statewide rent control policy.
In further local housing news, current mayoral candidate Rene Gonzalez wants to restrict tent distribution on a county level. His proposal came in a Friday meeting of the new Regional Homelessness Oversight Board. The proposal would limit tent distribution to periods of severe weather. It would also track who received tents and where they set them up. All tents would be labeled as being county-owned. Tents must accommodate no more than two people, be suitable for winter, and accompany a bundle of warm clothing. The oversight board includes Gonzalez, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler, as well as Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson and County Commissioner Lori Stegman. County representatives reacted skeptically to Gonzalez, especially given the countywide lack of shelter options. Stegman responded, quote, "I worry we're approaching a place where we're dehumanizing people. If we say no one is going to hand out tents and tarps, then why shouldn't we hand out food? Where is the line if we're going to deny someone the basic need of shelter?" End quote. Vega Peterson echoed Stegman's concerns, as did Mindy Statlander, who sits on the board as the CEO of the state's Medicaid provider, Health Share of Oregon. Wheeler missed the meeting, but his advisor, Skylar Brocker-Knapp, supported Gonzalez's proposal. Gonzalez has already championed efforts in Portland to deny shelter to the unhoused. As Commissioner of Public Safety, he barred Portland Street Response from distributing tents prior to a 2023 snowstorm. He cited fire danger as a core reason for the ban and brushed off reports of exposure deaths as a sign tents weren't keeping people warm. More recently, Gonzalez has voiced skepticism that people will choose to accept shelter even if it became available. He cites city data showing that between April 2022 and January 2024, over 70% of Portland's offers of sheltered beds to unsheltered people were declined. While Vega Peterson and others stressed the importance of affordable housing, in his pitch on Friday, Gonzalez doubled down on his putative stance, saying, quote, "The reality of encampments is that they are a sort of chaos in our community. We just want to make sure we're not facilitating, enabling that type of behavior," end quote. According to PSU's 2023 point-in-time count, there are 3,944 unsheltered homeless individuals in the county, compared to roughly 2,000 shelter beds countywide. The Homelessness Oversight Board will continue talks on a tent and tarp proposal over the coming weeks. They will present their recommendations to city and county commissioners on October 15th.
A legal expert has issued a warning that artificial intelligence tools could lead to discriminatory practices in hiring and firing. Algorithms and AI are increasingly used by businesses through automated employment decision tools. But Hardeep Reiki, a Seattle attorney, says these tools can be programmed with data that can train them to be inherently biased. He notes that Amazon, for example, developed one of these tools to review resumes, but had to abandon it in 2018 because it was eliminating female candidates.
This tool is only as good as the data that it's being trained on. And if that data is tainted by individuals that have bias, I worry that the tool itself will be mistrained.
Reiki says it's also hard to know how AI is using data to make its decisions, and claims these tools are essentially black boxes that could be discriminating against certain classes of people without the user knowing. Reiki says there are ways to protect people against this. During this year's Washington State legislative session in Olympia, House Bill 1951 was introduced to prohibit algorithmic discrimination by automated tools. The bill didn't pass, but Reiki says it was on the right path.
You have to put the onus on developers of the tool and users of the tool to make sure that whatever tool they're using isn't discriminating. And that's what the legislature has proposed.
Reiki says automated tools for business decisions like hiring and firing threaten the many gains in employment practices in recent decades.
We've worked so hard and we've made significant progress in the fields of trying to eliminate discrimination in the workplace. And I don't want this to kind of undo that or to hide that.
That was Hardeep Reiki, an attorney in Seattle.
Congratulations, Portland. You're no longer the whitest city in America, as shown by data recently released from the United States Census Bureau. Portland's white population dropped 2% to a total of 64%. Portland's Hispanic, Asian and Pacific Islander, Black, and multiracial populations increased. The Census Bureau analyzed the 50 largest cities in the United States. 29 did not have a single racial or ethnic majority. 13 cities had a white majority, 5 had a Hispanic majority, and 3 had a Black majority. Colorado Springs now holds the title as the whitest city in America with 65% of the population. Oregon began as a whites-only state with increasingly violent and restrictive exclusionary laws, keeping African Americans and other racial groups from owning property or even living in the territory during the late 19th century. It was not until 1926 that a formal repeal of these laws tore down the legal barriers to Black people's full participation in the state. Major global events like World War II massively diversified Oregon, but more intentional actions have aimed at making Portland more equitable. Portland Public Schools ending its contact with the Portland Police Bureau and other police reforms are among those changes. Portland saw energized Black Lives Matter efforts and urban renewal efforts like Albina Vision Trust that focused on improving racial equity and land use from 2019 to the present.
A mini-moon will be coming into Earth's orbit for just 2 months from September 29th to November 25th. NASA's Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System, ATLAS, first observed the asteroid called 2024 PT5 on August 7th. Unfortunately, it is not observable by the naked eye or even at-home telescopes because the object is just 33 feet wide. The last mini-moon to fall into Earth's orbit was 2020 CD3, which orbited the Earth for over a year in 2020. A mini-moon is an asteroid pulled into Earth's orbit for a few months to a few years. Most mini-moons come towards Earth from the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter on a horseshoe orbit. This unstable orbit, along with their size and composition, differentiate them from permanent moons. They are composed of metallic substances, carbon, clay, and silicate material. Other types of moons include ghost moons and quasi-moons. Ghost moons are clouds of dust found between the Earth and our permanent moon and can measure up to 100,000 kilometers across. Quasi-moons are space objects that orbit the Sun in a similar pattern to the Earth, but do not orbit the Earth itself. Mini-moons are typically rare, but several have been observed in the Earth's orbit since 2006. 2024 PT5 will be back in 2055.
What is observable with the naked eye? Republicans want winner-take-all electoral votes in Nebraska. The Georgia Board of Elections say precincts must hand-count ballots. And the Congressional Black Caucus defends Haitian immigrants against conspiracy theories. With more on these stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. We need to speak with one voice. We're a small state. We've got five votes. We're a Republican state. I think it's just something we have to get done. It's an issue of fairness.
Nebraska Republican Congressman Mike Flood is pushing his state to start awarding its Electoral College votes winner take all. Nebraska and Maine are the only states to award delegates by congressional district. Democrats have a good shot at the vote from the Omaha area, which could tip a tied race. Former President Donald Trump is pressing for the rule change, but Maine lawmakers say they might reply in kind. The Georgia Board of Elections has ruled that all ballots must now be counted by hand, following machine tally. Critics say that will delay results and produce errors, but board member Janelle King says it's about election integrity.
We have another layer just to ensure that the precinct count is right. If the precinct count is right, the county count is right, and then the state count is right.
King is one of three board members recently praised by Trump at an Atlanta rally. The state's Republican attorney general calls the move illegal. Congressional leaders say they've reached agreement on a three-month spending bill without a Trump-backed measure requiring proof of citizenship to vote. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says this means they can avoid a government shutdown.
Now that the MAGA GOP bill has failed, it's clear that only a bipartisan budget bill will keep the government open.
Controversial North Carolina Republican gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson is denying the charges and refusing to end his campaign. CNN revealed explicit offensive comments they say he made on a pornography website a decade ago, including calling himself a black Nazi.
Let me reassure you, the things that you will see in that story, those are not the words of Mark Robinson.
His top campaign staff all resigned over the weekend. In spite of previously calling him Martin Luther King on steroids, Trump pointedly did not invite Robinson to or mention him at a recent Wilmington rally. But Democratic Governor Roy Cooper says Trump must have been aware that Robinson has a history of disturbing comments.
Republican leaders and Donald Trump have known who he is. They've embraced him. They've supported him from day one.
House Democrats have introduced a resolution condemning racism towards Haitians. Congressional Black Caucus Chair Stephen Horsford of Nevada says communities in Ohio are living in fear after Trump and his running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, spread conspiracy theories about immigrants eating their neighbors' pets.
This racist scapegoating, pitting one group of Americans against another for political purposes, is dangerous and it has no place in our national discourse.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. We're talking with the Endangered Languages Project about Indigenous language interpretation as a human right. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Running on Air with candidates from District 1. Tonight's weather is partly cloudy with a low of 62 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 88 degrees. Today in history, Franklin Delano Roosevelt denies Republican accusations that he spent $20 million to pick up his dog, Fala, after he accidentally left him behind while visiting the Aleutian Islands. In a speech, the president said it was a distraction by his critics to sully the reputation of a defenseless dog. The small Scottish Terrier enjoyed a freshly prepared bone as his breakfast and accompanied FDR everywhere he went, including to sleep at the foot of the president's bed. The quote of the day is from comedian, writer, and musician Steve Martin. He mused about the joy and practicality of the sun in our life, saying, quote, "A day without sunshine is like, you know, night," end quote.
U.S. states are making profits on over 2 million acres of tribal lands. That's according to a new analysis from High Country News. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. states are profiting off more than 2 million acres of land sprinkled throughout reservations. That's according to a new investigation, which found that revenue from these lands largely goes towards state institutions. But tribes are often the ones paying. The Mountain West News Bureau's Hannah Merzbach has more.
The new report from news outlets High Country News and Grist shows a checkerboarded map inside reservations. Chris Stainbrook with the Indian Land Tenure Foundation says this makes it hard for these sovereign nations to care for their lands.
How do you manage on a landscape basis your lands when you can't have jurisdiction over those other pieces that are there?
He says tribes such as the Ute are often paying thousands of dollars a year to lease that land back. And that money pays for public education, hospitals, and jails. Some states are transferring land to tribes, but Stainbrook says only when it's not worth much. He says more awareness is needed. For National Native News, I'm Hannah Mersbach.
Native American students in Eugene, Oregon, ring in the school year with a powwow over the weekend, headlined by acclaimed rapper Supaman. Brian Bull reports.
Give him a round of applause, man. Everybody make that sound.
Christian Parrish takes the gun as a member of the Apsalega Nation of Montana and has performed under the moniker Supaman for over two decades. He's won several major awards, including an MTV VMA Award in 2017 for Best Fight Against the System, as well as the Aboriginal People's Choice Music Award for Best Video. During his presentation with DJ Elemental, Supaman encouraged Native youth to demonstrate respect, kindness, and openness to change while still preserving their culture. He played traditional flute music with hip-hop elements.
I hope they just go from here with a better understanding how to navigate life, you know, with some simple tools that we try to share during our presentation, as well as leaving with a good heart.
All about learning our indigenous way of life.
The powwow was to welcome students to a new school year at Eugene's 4J District. Becky White coordinated the event and is with the district's Natives program. As a person of Cherokee, Cheyenne, and Arapaho heritage, White appreciates the diversity within the Native community. She says today's young people are also pushing for change to tackle persistent problems, including racism and climate change.
I believe that this generation we have now that is in the K-12 system and the students that are in college right now are the most activist group of students we've had yet. And I appreciate them so much because they have the ideas, then they have the energy, and they have the drive.
Supaman is headed next to New York, where he'll be part of a week-long climate awareness event. He says the Supaman moniker is based on a superhero archetype that everyone can embody. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Eugene, Oregon.
During a rally in North Carolina over the weekend, former President Donald Trump made a campaign promise to the Lumbee tribe. Trump said if he's elected president in November, he'll sign legislation granting the Lumbee tribe federal recognition, the News and Observer reports. The tribe has long sought full federal status. It was recognized by North Carolina in 1885. Congress passed legislation in the 1950s to recognize the tribe, but denied benefits that other federally recognized tribes receive. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service filed an appeal that, if successful, would water down federal protections for gray wolves. Conservation groups say it's a bad move. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Environmental groups are slamming a Biden administration effort to remove federal protections from the endangered gray wolf. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service just appealed a 2022 court decision that reinstated protections for the gray wolf under the Endangered Species Act, protections lost in the Trump era. Derek Goldman with the Endangered Species Coalition says the feds are making contradictory moves.
On one hand, they said earlier this summer that they want to write a national recovery plan, but then they appealed to reinstate the Trump wolf delisting rule, which would presumably mean they don't have to do a recovery plan. So this is kind of sending a mixed message here.
In the suit, Justice Department attorneys argued that the gray wolf is no longer in danger of extinction. The National Rifle Association and hunting and livestock groups also supported the Trump-era policy, which would send protections back to the states. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife says seven confirmed packs of gray wolves have made their way down from Oregon. Goldman says the wolves enjoy state-level protections, but have a long way to go.
They certainly haven't recovered throughout all the suitable habitat that's in California, like the Sierra Nevada mountain range. But without the resources provided by the Endangered Species Act, they won't fully recover.
The feds have set a deadline of December 2025 to produce a new federal gray wolf recovery plan. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
New air pollution standards issued by the Environmental Protection Agency over the past 4 years should bring $250 billion in economic benefits each year across the U.S., this according to a new report. Co-author Rob Walcott with the Environmental Protection Network says the new protections will also save over 200,000 lives.
In addition to the reductions in premature death, we have the massive reductions in the number of asthma attacks.
Analysts project that reduced air pollution from industry and tailpipes will lead to 100 million fewer asthma attacks, ensuring fewer missed school days and fewer trips to the emergency room. Walcott notes the economic benefits far exceed any costs associated with compliance with the new standards. Co-author Jeremy Simons warns benefits from the new air pollution standards are not guaranteed. He points to Chapter 13 of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, written by six former Trump-appointed senior EPA officials, which details plans to roll back key EPA protections.
By putting polluters in control of our air and water instead of EPA scientists, Project 2025 would put millions of Americans needlessly at risk from asthma attacks, from cancer, lung disease, and heart disease.
Walcott says the new standards are especially critical for those most at risk from air pollution. That includes children, older Americans, and low-income families and communities of color living in the shadows of refineries and highways.
Communities in particular that have been subject to sustained high cumulative exposures over time will be the ones to experience the greatest benefits here.
That was Rob Walcott with the Environmental Protection Network.
Five organizations in Oregon will get special funding for projects to make their communities more age-friendly. Eric Tegedoff has more on their plans.
Five organizations in Oregon will receive funds for projects that make their communities more age-friendly. AARP Oregon has selected the quick action projects from applications to the National Community Challenge Grant Program. One state grantee is Dev Northwest, which provides financial resources and affordable housing. The organization will get $7,700 to build a community garden at one of its properties in Corvallis. Director of Housing Operations Leah Cooper says the group will build the garden with the community's older population in mind.
We plan to make garden beds that are more geared towards the older adults that live in the building. So they'll be up off the ground. They stand 3 feet high.
Cooper says the proposal came from conversations between staff and tenants based on what they needed. Since 2017, AARP Oregon has chosen organizations in the state for funding. It selected 35 projects and distributed nearly $430,000 to those projects in the state. In June, the national AARP organization chose 7 projects in Oregon for Community Challenge grant funding. Cooper says the grant is critical for organizations like hers that operate affordable housing and want to keep their prices down, where money for projects like gardens can be hard to spare. She also knows that the garden will address food insecurity for tenants.
It's twofold. It's addressing food insecurity, getting fresh vegetables to the population, but also it's a community activity. So people will be gardening side by side. We'll have events around the garden. So there's sort of a bunch of different needs that are being met.
This year, AARP's National Community Challenge Grant Program selected more than 340 projects across the country and distributed nearly $4 million. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Mini Moon Day, September 23rd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, tips, junior lunar astrological readings at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, my co-anchor Eliza Yurkov, and Ed Travaglia. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Eric Tegedoff, Suzanne Potter, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We'll be speaking with the organizers of an upcoming public forum on Indigenous language interpretation.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Monday, September 30th is International Translation Day, and on that day there's going to be a public forum held on Zoom by the Endangered Languages Project. The forum is called Building Community Networks of Dignity and Solidarity, Indigenous Language Interpretation is a Human Right. One local organization, Pueblo Unido PDX, will also be a part of it. I spoke to some of the folks involved to learn more. To start, would you mind introducing yourselves?
I'm Anna Ballou. I'm the Executive Director of the Endangered Languages Project.
Hi there. I'm Noel Morales. I work with the Consejo de los Pueblos Originarios as their Director for Language Preservation. And now I'll pass it over to our President.
Mi nombre es Saul Rivera.
So this is Saul Rivera. He is the president of the Consejo de los Pueblos Originarios and also is part of the Titiro Mico movement. He is originally from Yunani, Guerrero, and he has been here in the States for 12 years.
Okay, thank you all so much for being here. Coming up on Monday, September 30th, you're hosting a public forum called Building Community Networks of Dignity and Solidarity, Indigenous Language Interpretation is a Human Right. What can you tell me about this forum?
Yeah, so this forum is a chance to share the work happening at the grassroots by four Indigenous-led interpretation organizations across the U.S., one of whom will be Pueblo Unido here in Portland, and one of whom will be the Consejo de los Pueblos Originarios, who can tell us a little bit more.
We're going to be speaking a little bit more about what our movement means for the indigenous people of Latin America, specifically. Those are the folks that we work with, and how translation into their indigenous language means that they get access to human rights. And that's essentially a lot of what the work that